to tonight's Bruins-Islanders game. We welcome to the show, as we do each and every weekday morning at this time. It's a presentation of the Myers Automotive Group. We say hello and good morning to Pierre McGuire. How are you doing this morning, Pierre?
Excellent, JR. Good morning to you. Hello, Sean.
Morning, Pierre.
All right, Pierre, what do you make of Vegas's being down 2-0, being able to rally to tie the game and then win it in overtime? How huge a win is that for Vegas?
Oh, it's mammoth. It's gigantic. That being said, self-inflicted wounds. Colorado, I should say, is playing so reckless. Burakovsky, terrible turnover, poor defensive reads, jumping the defense up into the rush way too often, especially when you have a lead in the game. Turnover on the second goal, which ties it up on the Marchessault goal because they put the puck, Landeskog puts the puck into the feet of Graves. These are self-inflicted wounds. That game should have been over in the second period. Colorado completely and utterly dominated Vegas in the second period. It was not even a close game. Marc-Andre Fleury was spectacular, but Colorado was just reckless, and it's going to come back to haunt them.
Do you factor young team tactically, or maybe just the makeup of it has a hard time holding leads in Colorado, or is this just a one-off, Pierre?
Oh, it's not a one-off. They've been reckless for a while with the puck because they're just so darn good. And so when you get so darn good and then all of a sudden you think you can do anything and win games, that's not the recipe for success. There's a certain formula that has to be followed in order to close a team out or get a lead in a series. Watch Tampa Bay play last night against Carolina, the last 40 minutes of that game. That was closeout hockey. They were hard on every puck. They gave away statistics to get pucks in deep. They were really hard getting pucks out in their own zone. They were blocking shots like maniacs. There's a closeout factor you have to go through. Colorado's not going through it. Vegas is.
Yeah, I guess historically you mentioned Tampa. Would you put your Pittsburgh teams, Detroit, Colorado, the old Edmonton teams, is this kind of part of the journey that Colorado's on right now?
Boy, Nathan McKinnon doesn't want to hear you say that.
No, I know. But do you know what I mean?
I do, every one of them,
it sucked, especially for Detroit. It just felt like it was almost at a tipping point before they finally won in 97.
That was painful last year to be in Edmonton and watch them lose a Game 7 on a Joel Kiviranta hat-trick goal in overtime. I was there. That was so amazingly painful to see the reaction from that team. It might be part of what they have to go through, but I would... 2 years ago, when they lost to San Jose, I said, okay, you know, this team is trending the right way. Last year, obviously, we had a different situation because of the pod. But last year, the pain I saw those guys go through was amazing. Now, I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow night in Game 6 out in Vegas, but I would tell you one thing. Colorado just laid it out there in a bad way last night when they had the lead 2-0. That just wasn't good. That just wasn't smart.
When you're speaking of the recklessness of it, and they made the point during the TV broadcast last night. We got the American feed, your feed, by the way. They're talking about the defense being activated, was Ryan Graves, right? The pass across to Graves that hit off his skate and went back the other way. Is it mostly that you have the biggest concern over? Is, hey guys, we got the lead here. We don't need to be having a defenseman jump in as the extra man when we're trying to protect the lead.
Go watch the goal scored by Alex Tuck. Watch where the two defensemen are, Connor Timmins and Patrick Nemeth. They're up the ice. They're not even thinking that there's going to be a turnover there.
Is that on the coach, Pierre? Is that on the coach at the end of the day?
I think it's on everybody. You got to sense danger. You got to sense danger. You know, I can tell you what. We had, and Sean knows, we had high-flying offensive teams in Pittsburgh, like super high-flying offensive teams. At some point, we say, boys, the door's closed, and we're shutting it more. It's closed down. You're not doing anything else. Chip it out. Chip it in. Lock down the neutral zone. We're either playing a 1-2-2 or a 1-4, and we'll tell you what we're going to play soon. And that's what you do. And last night, that door should have been shut, and it wasn't. And now they're in trouble. They're in big trouble.
And Vegas has to have that same sense, Pierre, to shut the door in Game 6, right? Don't open this bad boy and have to go back for a Game 7.
No, definitely not. They're tempting fate. Now, you guys were talking about Mark Stone goal celebrations. I think the best one I've seen him have in a while was in Minnesota. I did the game. Oh, my goodness gracious.
Oh, yeah, that one behind the net?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that was an all-timer.
That was a pretty good goal celebration.
You're absolutely right.
I'll tell you that.
Hey, Pierre, you have the good fortune of being between the benches forever. We're talking about Mark Stone, of course, who came into the NHL, drafted by Ottawa low only because he's, a super hockey player, but bad skater. And through his work and through the development staff here in Ottawa, got up to, a bad-looking but a serviceable skater. And yet I watched that breakaway last night, Pierre, at the end of his shift, and he's pulling away from the Colorado defense.
Yes,
like
he's pulling away from Ryan,
when you're at when you're at ice level, just speed wise, is Mark Stone an average skater, an average speed wise player, or is he actually a little above average?
A little above average.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
It's just people. This is another problem here with evaluators of talent. Everything's got to be super slick and smooth. So you watch Braden Point skate, and you're like, wow, that guy's super fast, and he dominates. You watch, you know, some of the elite skaters, Taylor Hall. Watch some of the most powerful skaters in the league. You're like, wow, that guy's got to be moving twice as fast as the other guy that looks like, you know, a broken-down jalopy. But the problem is the broken-down jalopy sometimes goes really fast. They just don't look pretty. And so in Stone's case, he doesn't look super smooth. But he's better than average in terms of speed.
Is that also an athlete understanding his capabilities of, I got a burst here, I know how far I can go into the same time, feeling time and space to end up getting a shot off?
Yeah, no, he's a superior athlete, and he's an unbelievable competitor. I told you guys a long time ago, if he's not nominated for the Selke Trophy this year, then people that vote on it shouldn't be allowed to vote anymore. He's a nominee. They missed on Marchand. That's okay. But Stone and Marchand are two wingers that dominated defensively in the league this year. And he dominates because he reads the play so well, and he is much quicker than people think.
How much is Colorado missing Nazem Kadri?
They miss him. There's no question about it. I don't know if Nazem would have scored in overtime. JT Compher had an amazing opportunity, and he was probably playing in the place of where Nazem would be playing. So I don't know if Nazem would have scored there or not, but he potentially would have. But again, Fleury deserves a lot of credit, but they missed Nazem, there's no question.
If Colorado ends up losing this series, and whether it happens in six or seven games, and Kadri, obviously at that point, will have missed, if it's in game six, will have missed the entire series. And mm-hmm. his third suspension in the playoffs, well-documented, well-known, the first two in Toronto, where it got to the point where Toronto felt, you know what? I think that's part of the reasoning we're willing to move him on. Do you think potentially that that's this, you know, Joe Sakic may come to the same conclusion that we just can't trust him to make himself available in the playoffs in the biggest moments?
I don't know what he'd do, whether he'd do that or not, but I know one thing. They have players in their organization that are coming along unbelievably well. A player like Alex Newhook last night gets a great assist on Donskoy's goal. I've been telling you about him for at least 3 years now. I mean, he's playing out of position right now. He's playing as a winger. He can definitely play. He will eventually play as a top six forward in the league. So I don't know what they're going to do. They've got plenty of depth. That Tyson Jost has improved amazingly. He's playing as a number three center. So, I don't know cap-wise what Joe's going to try to do and whether that even factors into it or not.
Would Joe look at Claude Lemieux when he played and understand, hey, I'm going to live on the edge a little bit, but I also understand if I'm going to win, I need a guy like this?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. I mean, I don't think... It's not a nice guy business all the time. And, you know, Naz, that hit was preventable. The ones in earlier when he was in Toronto were definitely preventable. Those were on him. This one, I don't know whether he intended to try to do that or not to O'Reilly, but he definitely, I mean, that was a high hit. There's no question. It wasn't good. I was doing the game, and it wasn't good.
The game last night, Tampa finishes off Carolina in five games with a 2-0 win. The end of the day, Pierre, and Vasilevsky's outstanding again last night. Do you think he was in Carolina? Did you get the sense that he was in the shooters' heads a little bit? They were just, it's one of those things where the goalie's so good that they're either overpassing or, you know, trying to pick corners all the time and that sort of thing. Did you get that sense at all?
Oh, I think that's part of it with him. That's kind of like the Dominic Hasek thing. When you'd play Buffalo, especially when Hasek was really going great guns in Buffalo, teams would look to pass off a little more, try to pick corners, and they'd miss the net or they'd get... You know, there'd be turnovers and it'd be a problem. But I think the one thing that really stood out, and I know it's something we talked about before the series started, the depth players for Tampa have far more ability to score than the depth players for Carolina. And that was a big problem. I mean, even last night, if you watch Tyler Johnson, Ross Colton, and Patrick Maroon, that's the fourth line. That's the fourth line of the Tampa Bay Lightning. And they came up with a huge goal. There was one sequence, I would say, in the third period where they probably had four or five amazing chances to score, and then finally Colton did score. I thought the tipping point in the series was the grit factor and the depth players for Tampa were far better than the depth players and the grit players for Carolina.
Is that where the factoring in of the management and manipulation of the salary cap gives Tampa Bay, won't say unfair, but certainly gives them unparalleled depth?
Well, it's how they draft. I mean, I know.
But the salary cap and Kucherov sitting out the season, well, and back to last year,
yeah.
Hey, they've just done a really good job.
Yeah, they're very good at it.
And to that, they're role players, and we've criticized Toronto being the opposite, that, hey, the squeeze they put on versus what Tampa has created this incredible depth.
Tampa doesn't use analytics to draft depth players, okay? I'm just going to tell you the bottom line.
Okay.
And so that's the reality. So you can talk about the salary cap all you want, John. This is something that kind of irks me a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
This team's scouting staff has done an amazing job. They have nothing to do with the salary cap. Those guys, when you were a scout, did you go out on the road and watch a player and say, well, he might make $8 million, so we better not draft him? No. You draft players based on what you see. And their scouting staff has done an amazing job, and they continually reload. Benny Grude does an amazing job down in Syracuse, amazing job developing players. And that franchise has its sights set on the right things, and that's why they win with consistency.
So for Carolina, their season comes to, I'm sure, a much earlier conclusion that they had hoped and probably thought. Even they thought they'd go further than five games against Tampa. And some big question marks around that team now, Pierre, as they head into the offseason. A month ago, all the reports from all the insiders were that the deal with Rod Brind'Amour was done. He was going to return as coach, albeit at a surprisingly small salary. Do you think that they've just kept it under wraps and said, hey, we'll unveil everything after the playoffs? Or is it really in question as to whether he'll be back there or not?
Boy, I don't know. It's something that, you know, I talk to Johnny Forslund every day. I work with Johnny all the time in the playoffs. And I would tell you, and I worked a lot with him during the regular season this year. And he's tight to that Carolina thing. And I haven't heard one thing from him about Rod Brind'Amour situation. I find that a little bit interesting, especially when you know, he's friendly with the man. So I haven't heard a thing about it, and that kind of makes you know, pause just a little bit. I know obviously the Rangers are looking for a coach, and if Brind'Amour ever became available, they would have no problem paying him.
Seattle.
Seattle, obviously, in the relationship he has with Ronnie, and he's from British Columbia. You know, people take it for granted just because he went to Notre Dame in Saskatchewan that he's from the prairies. He's not. He's from British Columbia. And his father still lives there. So, I don't know. I don't know what direction he would go or what they're going to do, but if they lose him, that's a major shot across the bow.
Just for our show and nobody else listening, when you're on the flight, do you ever pretend you're asleep and then see them texting? Johnny and Brind'Amour, just between us.
I guess they text, but I don't know if it's on the
flight. Exactly. I said earlier, Pierre, man, when I look at U.S. markets, I kind of use the analogy of selling a program. It's often college football. It's college basketball. It's Coach K. He is the program. My, oh, my, in any market in the United States, you roll out Rod Brind'Amour, even if you don't know who the hell he is, the way he presents himself, I got to think for a lot of programs in the United States, even from Broadway to anywhere, they would just love to have this guy as the face of their hockey team.
Just watch what happens in the handshake line last night between Carolina and Tampa and see how Brind'Amour conduct himself. That's just a true professional gentleman, and he deserves a huge amount of credit for the way he's carried himself, the way he prepares himself, the way he prepares his teams. I think I told you guys this story 2 years ago, but I'll tell it again quickly. I got to the rink in Washington. Washington was playing Carolina really early. I got to the rink probably around 7:30, 7:45 in the morning, before I had to do the show, as a matter of fact. And I hear this banging by the Carolina dressing room. I'm like, wow, that's kind of weird. I wonder what players here this early in the morning. It's Rod Brind'Amour doing deadlifts at like 7:45 in the morning.
Yeah,
there were no players there. I'm just telling you the facts. And I was like, whoa, this guy's into it. I mean, this is amazing. This is like 7:30, 7:45 in the morning on a game day.
Yeah, my buddy Lee used to say at Notre Dame, he'd come home after a long game. They had to lock the gym. He'd end up going in there.
That's true. 100% true. Yeah, at Wilcox, Saskatchewan.
Yeah.
They had to padlock the gym because he would wake up the whole school.
Yeah.
Body doesn't make itself, man.
No.
Rod
the bod, do you feel like, kind of head-to-head from a promotional standpoint, if he goes to the Rangers, could you feel a Vince McMahon moment where they're both coming down and both all of a sudden tarps off and going at it?
Trotsky and him?
No, Vince McMahon.
Oh,
Trotsky.
I'm
not doing the midget toss. I'm doing the...
Careful.
Or the smaller person, sorry.
Yes.
But I just look at him and these pressers and, God, that phone call, as you said, he did with his father after. And none of this is the old contrived, which are some other people in the industry. The sincerity of this fella is incredible.
Yeah, no, he's outstanding. I remember when he got traded. You can go Google it. There was a huge snowstorm in Carolina, Gordon Miller and I were there to actually do a game, and the snowstorm came, and Rod got traded. And so he was already at the hotel. There were three NHL teams, I believe, in Carolina at the time, Montreal, Carolina, and there was one other one. I think a Western team was there too. Rod actually wanted to go work out, so he cut off two bottles, and he used them as shovels. I'm not kidding you, like those plastic bottles. He cut off the tops and turned them into shovels and got his way to a car and got to the rink, and it was closed.
Wow.
Amazing.
Yeah, that happened, yeah.
So Rod Brindamore is a huge question mark for Carolina. Dougie Hamilton as well, who is probably...
Yeah, cost a lot of money.
Yeah, the most heralded...
Going back there.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and you've spoken before that the owner there not necessarily wants to spend the most money. Do you think that... is Dougie Hamilton the type of player that you think potentially could break the bank, that some team will break the bank for, I should say, this summer?
When you say that, do you mean $7 million, $8 million? What do you mean?
No, closer to Petrangelo money. Nine million?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No, but still, like, you know, a ton of money and a lot of term.
I think on him, it's not going to be about the money. It's going to be about the term.
Yeah, okay. Why do you think some teams are reluctant to give him? Like, does he have a lot of miles on him,
in your opinion?
Or?
I think the one thing to watch, just based on discussions I've had with different people, it might be less for some players. It might be less money and more term. And for some players, it might be a little more money, but way less term. That might be the case with him. I don't know, but I'm just telling you that's – I talked to enough guys to negotiate these contracts, and that's going to be the thing to watch this summer, is to see who's getting term and who's getting dollar value, because it's going to be two distinct camps.
The other discussion we had, and that's why Carolina is so fascinating to us here in Ottawa, is Andrei Svechnikov is an RFA, as is Brady Tkachuk, drafted two spots apart. Their career numbers, Pierre, are pretty similar.
Yes.
Not exactly the same type of player, but not that far off. He, according to a Hockey Night report last night, has already last summer turned down an 8-year extension for $60 million, $7.5 million per year. Do you look at those two players and do you say to yourself, those two players should get similar contracts? Are they similar? Not same player, but similar players?
Well, they're different. They're way different.
Yeah.
I mean, Brady's
in terms of impact, I guess.
Yeah, Brady's got a leadership component to him that Svechnikov does not have, even though Svechnikov's a really tough kid. They play different styles. Brady can dominate the boards, unlike very many players in the league. Svechnikov can't do that. Svechnikov might shoot the puck a little bit better, but Brady's going to get to those danger zone areas a lot quicker. So, I mean, they're different. They're really different. I'd have a hard time comparing them. I know, you know, the numbers and everything else, but I think their values for each of them that are a little bit different.
So I guess the question I'm asking you is, for whomever of them signs first, you wouldn't say, well, that's a comparable for the other one?
Well, no, the other one will try to use it. There's no question. They'll try to. Doesn't mean that, you know, teams are going to agree to that. But in terms of evaluating them as players, they both bring really a different skill set.
Well, we saw Svechnikov handle Ovi, so we know he can fight as well.
I was there that night. That was
not pretty.
That was really scary.
From a Carolina standpoint, you know, small factor, but do you look at the fact of the trade they made with Hanifin and Lindholm going out, that suddenly that was Mr. Fox, who, of all things, is actually turned into Sogard here in Ottawa based on picks, but to then have Dougie Hamilton walk out the door, couple of young assets right there expiring from a Carolina standpoint, probably not great for business, Pierre?
No, you can start in the broadcast booth. They lost a Hall of Fame broadcaster in Chuck Caton because they wouldn't pay him. They lost a potential Hall of Fame broadcaster in Johnny Forslund, who's already left to go to Seattle and works on the national stage because they wouldn't pay him. I just think, again, we'll see how this plays out in Carolina. It's a different... Boy, oh boy, they've got some good players, and they've got a nice team, and they got an excellent coaching staff. They really do. And, you know, we'll see how it plays out. It's hard to predict when you don't know what the owner's mindset is. It's hard to predict on any of this stuff.
Last one for you. You'll be on the island tonight for Game 6 of the Bruins and the Islanders. What do you think we'll see from both teams?
Oh, this will be an amazingly intense situation. I don't know how much the Bruins have left. If they have a lot left, then they'll make it a really hard game. But I did Game 6 of Pittsburgh and Islanders. It was on Long Island, I should say. It was in Uniondale, and I'll tell you what, it was that was a really hard game for Pittsburgh. That was maybe one of the worst games Crosby has played in his career, and that's because of the way the Islanders pressured. So if the Islanders play a pressure game, I think it's a real tough night for Boston.
How much is Butchie going to hear from the crowd?
Oh, he'll hear a lot.
They were playing. Did you see that video yesterday with the Saints come marching in, played to them coming on the ice?
There's going to be a lot going on there tonight. I mean, I can tell you right now, it's there are newspaper articles all over the place down here. And the New York Times, Mike Vaccaro, one of their real featured columnists, wrote a pretty tough column about it. So I would say that he's going to hear a lot.
There'll be more than a few fans dressed up as Saints, I'm sure, for the for the game tonight. Should be great. You'll be in the middle of it, and we'll look forward to chatting with you tomorrow all about it. Boston, the Islanders tonight at 7:30. We'll have the game here on TSN 1200 as well. Appreciate the time, Pierre, and we'll chat tomorrow.
Awesome, Jared. Thanks a lot. Take care, Sean. Have a good day, everybody.